Hello and welcome to my talk. It's about leveraging a local large language model for doing automated changelog generation. Now that's a short outline. I will talk at the introduction about the models I use. Then this took a lot of time, but I will not talk that much about it, the data collection pipeline. Then also define tuning. And then and the results of the fine-tuning, if fine-tuning really works or not. And the last point will be quantization, so that the LLM I fine-tune then really runs on your local machine. Just a quick start for the very, you want to try it out. You can, it's really a working piece of software. These are the instructions how to install it. You should know how to do it. It's available on, it's in, already in factory, that means it's on Tumbleweed. On Leap, it's now just in the double project. I didn't submit it yet to the Leap project. These are the resources. There is the fine-tuned model, if you know it, and the other one, that's the source code. Now let's start. Why should the introduction? So why do we want to do that? We have, so if you are used to the Open Build Service, which is used to create our distribution, then you have to see that if you commit a package there and if you want to send it to factory, then it has to be, then it has to have a changelog. And the changelog has to have a special format. And if you don't have that format, the factory maintainers will simply reject that package and you have to do it again. The changelog also has to have something inside, which is mostly what have changed if you do a version update or if you change the build process. It also have to reflect what you have to change in the build process. And so, for example, and most times you do both at the same time, because if you update the version, you also have to change the build description, the so-called spec file. And so that you reflect, both, you have to mangle the upstream changelog and changes you have made. The thing is that there's also opportunity, because we have also from packages which are now already in factory, we know how the data correlates. We know how if a changelog looks a certain way from the upstream project and it changes in the build description, also known as the spec file, how it looks like and how then the changelog must look like. So I have to commit, existing tools can do the same. They can kind of collect what's in the changelog, collect the data from upstream, and then create you, and then trying to build that. The thing is, if somebody upstream decided to use another character as bullet points, then they might fail. You can get that with reg access right, but then you end at a given point with Perl, and that's not the way I wanted it. So the advantage here to use an LLM is, yeah, okay. We can also get semantic changes, like that was I hoping for, that an LLM can pick up if there in the upstream changelog is something, oh yeah, this builds now in Windows that way, or there was an Apple-specific change. I don't want them to show up in our build log, because it's not, it's information we don't need. The thing why not use something like Gemini or ChatGPT is that I wanted it to run completely locally, so that we do not leak data into the cloud. And that's a thing. So we don't leak any information into the cloud, and on there, and it's clearly a hype thing at the moment. Now why fine tuning here model? Fine tuning means you take an existing model, present it with your special data, and then get it into so that it can do your job, and not why to use one of these big cloud models. It's the cloud models are really big. You cannot run them on your local machine. And that's the reason why I decided, okay, I take an existing smaller model, do a fine-tuning on it. For picking up the right model, there are several constraints. The model must be really small, so that at the final end it can run on your local machine. I have to use a permissive slicing so that you can really allow to use it. Some people, some of the models which are kind of open source, they don't have, they are just allowed to use for scientific research, so you have to really take, take care that it's a MIT or Apache 2 license. It must be one of the models where you really get the full weights, which is not quantized before. If it was quantized, I will come later to point what quantization really is, then you can fine tune. I also decided, just because I decided it, that I wanted to use a transformer-based model and not one of these GPT models, all the big models we know today, like Gemini or Claude, they are GPT-based models. I used a transformer-based one. Okay, now the T5 model, which I used. It's an encoder-decoder model where these GPT models are decoder only. The thing is why I wanted to use that, it's because it has this bidirectional encoder, so it sees the complete upstream changelog at once and then creates your changelog entry. It's really good for translation, summarization, and this structured text. Whereas the GPT model, that's a decoder-only model. It has a single decoder, which means it does not really see all the information. It's really very good because it creates a token by token. It's very good for chat, and that's where it's really used for. Or for text completion. Yeah, the key difference is that the T5 model reads all input at first, and then it generates the response. That was what I wanted to have. Now, that's again a more detailed view of this encoder-decoder architecture, where for this you have the input which comes up there, then it's kind of transferred to a high-dimensional vector space, and then from that vector space the answer is created and always shifted through. But there's at any point in time, the encoder-decoder models knows the complete input. I presented it. Whereas the just the GPT and Llama models and also Claude and all the other ones, they just have one of these blocks, which are kind of very big because this multi-headed attention or masked multi-headed attention, they are having, I think, you have to look it up, but I think it's some hundreds, yeah, encoder multi, they have some hundreds heads, attention heads, okay. Now, what's this mask means, so for the encoder-decoder model, you see, that's now the first sentence, I present always the LLM, and you see that everything which inside there is considered. Whereas for the GPT model, you have just this masked attention, where you see if it creates the first token, it always just sees what it always has, what it already has written. That was the reason why I thought the encoder-decoder model is better. Now, where does this T5 model come from? It's a text-to-text transformer, text-to-text transfer transformer. It was kind of one of the first really big models, which was then free. For it, everything is text, and it has the Apache 2 license, which gives us the possibility to really use it for everything. It also, you know where it was trained from. It was trained from the colossal clean crawled group corpus, which is just the downloaded internet at the time. It's just 750 gigabyte where it's trained from. It's not that big. Yeah. Yeah, that's the model sizes here. I also have it. So with 60 million parameter, it's it has just 12 layers and it's 200 megabytes big. The base is one is quite bigger. It nearly fits 1 gigabyte, and the large model would be about 3 gigabytes. The large model could fit in your laptop, but without quantization, not really. Also, the the bigger the model is, the longer without quantization it would take a long time to create the changelog entry. So now the data collection pipeline. What do we need? So for the training, we need all the accepted requests to factory, which means they are all already in factory. I also wanted to have the difference in the build description, the spec file, so that I see, okay, there was a patch added or some kind of another build mechanism was used. That's also the information also should go in. The source file changes, which means was there a new source added or removed? This also has to be tracked. And then I also take the release notes from an upstream project. So if it's a GitHub link, I just check GitHub online. If there was a change there, or if there was on the release page there was changes, I downloaded that one and I'll present them also. And then I also the source file changes. I also look into the source toolbar. If there's a change log, a changes file, a news file, and then take from that one the first 100 lines to see so that the model is trained to it. And then the actual changes file, this is the target where we train our model to. So that means I present the model, this data I show here, and then I train it that it creates the correct changelog entry, which is already in factory. So the idea is that if I then present it with new data, that it will still create a valid changelog entry. Now, I had to get out the data of OBS. From OBS, I did, for the first start, I did a very naive approach. I just took a random, looked at that time when I started this project, what is my latest submission request, and then just took a random number between zero and this number, checked it if it's a submission to OpenSUSE Factory, if it was accepted, and then if it was accepted, I identified source zero so that I know what source tarball it is, downloaded that source tarball, got the changelog entry from if it has a changes file, a changelog file, or anything else, grabbed there the first 100, it's just the first 20 lines, and if source zero or the URL points to GitHub, I also checked for the GitHub release pages and get there the latest changelog. If you do data collection, you always have to consider do I get any personal information on privacy consideration and also license considerations for this? The thing is, I can extract the data because it goes to factory, so the spec file has then obviously MIT license. The changelog also the changelog files, they also go to a OS. They also have an acceptable open source license if they are accepted in factory. So the same holds true for the changelog file where I extract information from, and for the GitHub page, I think it's the same. Personal information, I really don't drain the. There could be some personal information inside if it's inside the changelog file itself. But from OBS, I don't extract that information. Who submitted it, who accepted it, that's, I just don't need that information, so that's the reason I didn't collect it. Also, the only thing which is a bit privacy is the request ID, but I just used them as key for the data management and not, I did not request, present it to the LLM. Now, how does it look like? So this is one of the request ID I used. So you see it goes to GNOME Factory, the package is GNOME Music, there's a version update, the tarball was changed, the changes file was changed, the spec file was also changed, and then you see the line 5, that's the name in the spec file, what has changed there. Then line 6, that's where we really then drain to it, because that's the changes div, so that's the change in the changes file. And then I identified the source file, and then from there I got from the archive changelog what was in the upstream changelog, the URL and the GitHub release notes. It didn't have any GitHub release notes. So that's then the between the input text, that's what I present the LLM. And the target is go, that is what I wanted to get from the from the fine-tuned LLM. And that's another one. Just two examples here. You see here the same. Here there wasn't, I think, there was just a patch added and no version update, but we still want to get a proper changes file. Okay, then here it looks like this. It gets fast because there's no, because I also check what version is inside, so I don't need any, because the version wasn't updated, I don't present it the update to the changes, to the upstream changelog file. Just here that something was changed in the spec file, it should try to get this. Okay. Now we have to talk, unfortunately, about tokenization. Tokenization, so the LLM itself does not really work on the real information. They were tokenized. Tokenizing means you transfer your words into kind of numbers. And what I have to talk about is because the white spaces are filtered out. And that's the thing I have, and for changelog entry, new lines are really important, so I don't want to filter out the new line character. That was the reason why I had to add this as a special character here. That's the special token handling for the new line characters. And then I also, that's also things if you train the LLMs, you have to do padding, you have to, for example, that they all have the same size, you fill them up just with kind of zeros, you have to cut a maximum so that the input is not too big, and then all this kind of data preparation has to be done. Now, fine-tuning and results. The first thing is, what will happen if we present that to if we present the data and see the output if it's not fine-tuned? And then you see for this first request, this was this request to Neo Music. You see, yeah, okay, it does not say as anything this would be rejected in factory for sure. That's the small model. That's the most upper one. Then this the base model. Then it really gets interesting. Why there is Marinus Schaal and Hungarian and the Rätsel, I don't know. And the large model really gets an interesting gibberish of, it looks a bit like German, English Gebührenpflichtig, that's an interesting word. Okay. Then the one for PD Shell, then it suddenly decides we are Russians, or I don't know what this really is. It could be also Ukrainian, or I don't know. And the large model here completely just says, yeah, because there was some change, I think, in the auto setup, it just takes that one. So that's not really, so if we present it to this small, not fine-tuned model, okay, this won't work out. Now, the fine-tuning itself needs some hyperparameters, which are important and which you have to find out. So that's the optimizer, which means how do you decide when you kind of change the weights in the model, how do you change it? You have to set a learning rate. You have to start with a slow learning rate, then increase the learning rate, and then at the end, when you're near the end of learning, you have to decay again or stay to go to a slower learning rate again. Then what's still important and what's understandable is the evaluation and data split. This means that of 10%, that means that I just use 90% of the data for training the LLM, and 10% I just used at every end step. It's, I think 500 step or something like this. I just run it with this 10% of the data which the LLM didn't see before, and see if it would still learn from them something. And I stopped the training at the point where I see, okay, it does not really learn anything from this unseen 10% anymore. That's quite important here. That's still here the parameters, which I, that's the batch size, that means how many samples are used at the same time, how many steps are used, the epochs just mean how many times the training data is presented to the LLM, because because I interrupt the training process when it does not learn from this 10% data, or from the evaluation data anymore, the epochs are not always reached. I used one big NVIDIA card for that we have in the labs. It's a L40 with 48 gigabytes of RAM and a TDP of 300 watt. It ran for, most of them ran for days, so it was not that much energy wasted, to be honest. If we see that big data, if you see that demands for this high, for the data centers consuming so many energy, not in my case here. Now that's the training loss for the different models, and you see, as soon as it kind of reaches a minimum, you just stop the training, and all of them were stopped in the training because they didn't learn anymore. There you see the steps and the runtime for the small model. It was 13 hours, 14 hours, and the T5 model I just ran over the weekend. Big cause any is, I think somebody else used that card. It was really a bit longer, but it's still doable in over the weekend. I think it was a long weekend. It was over the 1st of May or something like this. Now we have the first result for our fine-tuned model, and you see that really looks good. For GNU Music, okay, it says me, you remember the gibberish before? That's not gibberish. We clearly see, okay, something happened in the fine-tuning. I'm really impressed with that, if I looked at it the first time. Now there's a problem. Can anybody spot the problem? It really looks good, okay? But there's a big problem here. Yeah, we don't have the unrelated gibberish anymore. It mostly reflects the changes, but the ugly is we did the overfitting. That means it learned from the training data. So for example, we had this for GNOME Music, we had this number of languages, this list of languages, and said updated translation. But the model is too small to get that information, to understand it. Especially, it is a small model which summarizes that here. Oh, it updated this rendition. Oh, yeah, okay. This minor quality of life improvements, if you remember correctly, we can go back, but I don't show it here. This is really in the changelog, so that's good, but this updated translation, that's overfitting. And also, it has hallucinations, because in the PDS shell upstream changelog, nothing, it didn't mention sleep 15. When we see here the T5 large, where is it? Somewhere it says that there was sleep 15. Yeah, the fix is built with newer version of sleep 15. But it was not in the data. If it's not in the data, it just hallucinated it because other data showed so much sleep 15, it thought, yeah, okay, let's put some sleep 15 inside. That's good. No. So other samples I just now picked two random ones for the presentation, other ones showed also more ugly signs of hallucination and overfitting. Yeah, that means we need a bigger data set. I said it was a naive approach. The collection of data, and the problem was with the naive approach, because I just took a random number, had to check OBS, if it goes to factory, if it was accepted, and all that kind of stuff. That was the data collection took me a lot of time. In the background I did other stuff there. So the solution was quite easy. I just called Adrian Schröter on Slack and said to him, yeah, I need a list of all, I explained him the problem, and he just replied me with a list of all accepted requests to factory. And with that list of accepted requests to factory, I could easily create a much bigger list of samples. Now we see I also changed some other hyperparameters so that it does not, that the evaluation step that often. You see why they stopped. They then really reached the maximum number of epochs. They could still perhaps learn a bit of it, but I didn't need really run it any longer. And now we see still, as expected, The fine-tuned models show us a good result. We don't see any hallucinations anymore. It sees correctly that there was, it sees, okay, there was a changed file. It says, okay, I have to mention that file, that's correct here. And also gets the lines from the upstream changelog, whereas the small model, thanks to our contributor to this release, the other ones got it that this is just a sentence it should avoid. Now, okay, that's good. We are really at a good point now. We don't have the hallucination, but the small model still has this, thanks to our contribution and also in other things, it was not that good. So for a real usage, I wanted to use the base and the large model to run, also on a laptop like this one. So we should fit it down to 1 GB so that it would even fit on graphic cards or other stuff. So the solution is to use quantization to reduce the model size, and also this reduces the runtime because you don't calculate with floats anymore, because with then if it's quantized, which means you go from a float 32 to an int 8 in our case, it reduces greatly the runtime. Why does quantization and deployment? Now the question here is, why does, as explained, the quantization goes from a FP32 floating value to an int 8? Why does it work? And the thing is because an LLM itself is internally overparameterized. So that means it can also, because it can handle noisy input, you can still reduce it. So it's itself robust to tolerate small errors, and also that's also the weight values. So they cluster around certain values. So you do not really quantize it in a naive way where you say, okay, you just do it linearly. You really pick special numbers there where the weights cluster, and that also works because, if you remembered the steps, the graphics I showed about decode and the encoder, there was always the normalization step, which means a normalization step also means that you reduce the values to a range, so you scale the values from its maximum to minimum, that the maximum minimum lies between 0 and 1. And so that's the reason why quantization works that good. It has the benefits, it has a smaller size, you have a faster inference, you really lower the memory, and you have a minimal accuracy loss, mostly 2%, it's said. One big framework for quantization we know is OLAMA. If you want to run development, you mostly use OLAMA. The thing is, I couldn't use OLAMA in our case, or LAMA CPP, where OLAMA relies on, because it's they only work for this decoder-only model. So I have to use ctranslate2, which does the which can run quantized models with an encoder-decoder architecture. The int 8 quantization means we go from a 4-byte value to a 1-byte value for weight. The result is for the T5. I also, you see also the compression results there for the small model, which did not really succeed in doing that. But the base model then goes down to 220 megabytes, while the T5 model goes around 700 megabytes. Yeah, it's like the soft RAM thing, which was a scam, but quantization isn't a scam here. It really does the job. Now the model of the quantized and is uploaded to Hugging Face, which is kind of the GitHub for models. There's the URL where you can get it, and I also did a simple Python script, which is on GitHub and also in Factory. It's changelog n, which you can just go to OBS repository, run it, and then it does the steps, downloads the model, represents the data to the model, and then creates you a kind of changelog entry. Okay, and that's the OBS repo where it lives on. Yeah, okay, it was on Lapsconf. Sorry, I would have changed that. What was my future plan? What could we also do? We find using, for example, initial Python package generation, so that we just take the PyPy things, represent a spec file there, and then get a model which gets the other things right. A factory acceptance bots would be cool. That because I always miss factory, because I always do errors there that it says, okay, this is a submission request which looks good, or this is a submission request where you messed something up. Also perhaps to see, okay, we know there are dev packages, there are SUSE packages. This is how a dev description looks like. This is like an this spec file looks like. Could we get this kind of from an LLM, at least? But it would work in both ways. Yeah. If something of this package happens, I will talk about this next year, so don't give me any input. Yeah, thank you for your attention. And are there any questions? No, it's too hard for questions, I see. Okay, done. Thank you again.